Hello, this is Pastor Galen from the First Nazarene Church in Chicago, and welcome to our podcast. Hey, before we hear the message today, I simply wanted to say that no matter where you're at, we're glad that you're listening today. We hope this message will inspire you, instruct you, and help you grow in your relationship with Jesus. And if you live in the Chicagoland area, maybe this is the first step for you joining us in person sometime. Or if you want to, you can always check out our online live services every Sunday on our website at firstnaz.cc. Thanks again for joining us. Enjoy the message.
All right. Well, good morning. I think the kids did a pretty good job. What do you guys think? We give them a round of applause. Nice job, guys. It's my personal unbiased opinion that doing motions when singing is more fun than standing there. So I enjoy it every Sunday. If you don't know me, my name is Hunter. I'm the children's pastor here. And so most Sundays I'm preaching to the kids in the gym or in Cerrado or somewhere else. And every once in a while they ask me to come bring the message here. And I love to do so. However, I always bring a little something with me. If you haven't heard this by now, I usually bring a candle. And every service, every Sunday, when we start off with the kids, we light the candle. It's the same thing every Sunday. It's the start of the service every Sunday. And I don't know if one of the kids will be able to shout out why we light the candle every Sunday. If you know, go ahead. It shows that God is here with us. Exactly right. It's a reminder of the presence of God. I don't know if you remember the story of Moses in the burning bush or when the flames of tongue came on the believers at Pentecost and it's the fire. It's to show the presence of God is here with us. And so to start this morning, I'd like to light a candle. And I hope you feel the presence of God among us today. He's here. And at the end of service, we always turn it off because it reminds us that God doesn't stay here with us. Instead, he goes with us. And so I pray as we begin that you feel like God is here with you, with us. Today, I want to tell you a story. As the kids always know, after we light the candle, we always do what I call story time. We tell a story out of the Bible, which I remind them is a book full of true stories about God. And each of these stories has one thing in common. They tell us something about God and something about us. So I'd ask you to lean in this morning and hear what God has to say to us. Our story for the day is about a Jewish girl, a girl who was raised by her cousin in a country that wasn't her own, a girl that became thrust in the spotlight through no fault of her own and was faced with an impossible, difficult choice. This girl's name is Esther. And if you haven't heard the story of Esther yet, you'll find a book about her in the Old Testament. You can flip to it in your Bibles if you'd like, or I'd ask you to just lean in because her story is powerful. And I think it teaches us a lot this morning about who God is and about who you are. But before we begin, let's pray. God, thank you so much for being a good and faithful God. I pray this morning as we've come together to worship you and to hear your voice that you would speak loudly and clearly and we would walk away changed. Thank you for being you, and thank you for being with us today. In your name, amen. Now, if you open the book of Esther, her book and her story actually begins with a king. His name is King Xerxes, and he is the king of the most powerful empire on earth at the time, the Persian Empire. This empire stretched over most of the known world, and King Xerxes was known for being ruthless. He was known for expanding his empire at any cost necessary. You didn't mess with King Xerxes. You didn't mess with the empire. And in the book, at the start of Esther, King Xerxes is celebrating. We're not totally sure why, but we do know that he chooses to celebrate for 180 days. For those counting, that is 6 months. 6 months of no working, 6 months of no responsibility, 6 months of just partying. I don't know about you, I would be very exhausted after 6 months. And it's really to show the king's wealth, his power. Everyone gets to celebrate. The kingdom will still rise on. He is that guy. He pays for it all, that kind of stuff. And at the end of the 6 months, he celebrates the fact that he had a party to celebrate by throwing a party for 7 days to celebrate the fact that he celebrated for 6 months. Which is just a crazy thing. I would never do that. But he does that, and it's this huge moment in the kingdom. Everyone's partying, having a great time. All the important people are at the palace having fun with the king, and they're having just the best time. At the end of the 6 months and at the end of the 7 days, the king asked the queen to make an appearance before all the people. And this is where the problem happens, because the queen refuses. She will not come. Now, in the Persian Empire, under King Xerxes, no one said no to the king. No one was supposed to. And because the queen says no, he removes her as queen entirely. She's gone. Either she dies or she's exiled, one of the two, but she is no longer queen. That is the result of her saying no to the king, of doing something the king didn't want her to do. As I remind the kids, every time we talk about a king in the Bible, whatever the king wants, the king gets. And in this instance, the king didn't get it. It was her fault. Now, a few days goes by, and the king comes to regret this decision to get rid of his queen, the queen that he had chosen to rule with, obviously, and he decides to find a new one. So here's what he does. He grabs young women from all over the empire that stretches over most of the world. They gather everyone together, and over a year, they go through meetings and like beauty pageants, and they talk with the king, and each of them meet the king and all these things until at the end of it, the king will pick one of these women to be the next queen of the Persian Empire. And this is where we meet our main character, Esther. She is the one out of all the women in the empire that is picked to be queen. It's pretty miraculous. Now, normally in my stories, I have a kid come up and ask to play the part of Esther. So if I have any, I'm just kidding, I won't do that. But I am going to ask you to step into Esther's shoes a little bit this morning. I want you to imagine a girl who's just grown up in a country that's not even her own. The people of Israel have been scattered over the world, over this empire. And I want you to imagine she's just living, raised by her cousin, making do her normal, ordinary life, when suddenly, out of all the people in the kingdom, the king chooses her to be queen. What a turnaround. A attendance and people following you and getting whatever you want kind of queen. A I get to have audiences with the king kind of queen. A make way for Queen Esther kind of queen. This is a total life change. What a life. What a change. And it's here in Esther's story as she becomes queen that we meet another main character in our story, her cousin Mordecai. Now, Mordecai has helped raise Esther, and his role in Esther's life and in this story is really this kind of protector and guider. We see as Esther's life spins into overdrive, as suddenly she's queen and gets everything she wants and has all these responsibilities and privileges, Mordecai is kind of there to help remind her who she is. She is a Jew. She's someone who follows God. And as she gets overwhelmed, she'll come to Mordecai for advice, and he kind of sticks around. In fact, we see him taking a job at the palace gate just to be close to Esther. And we see Mordecai working for the betterment of the people around him to the point where he overhears a plot to overthrow the king and reports it and saves the king's life. We see Mordecai as kind of this character keeping us all on track, working for the betterment of everyone, keeping Esther grounded. I don't know if you have that kind of person in your life, the person who kind of keeps you on track and reminds you of who you were. When I was reflecting on Mordecai, it made me think of my parents. See, so many times when I was growing up, especially in high school, you know, the most time when you're the most emotionally stable, I would be panic mode, total anxiety, freaking out about I don't even know what because it was that unimportant. But I do know that I would come screaming down the stairs as fast as I could, and I would go, Mom, Dad, oh my gosh, the world is ending. Now, obviously, the world hasn't ended, nor do I think it will anytime soon, but they were able to help point me and remind me of who I was and who God was. In those moments of anxiety and stress and unsure of who I was or who I was going to be, they kept me focused and going in the right direction. And I hope you have someone in your life or that you can play that role for someone because they're really important. See, Mordecai is going to be really important to Esther's role here because he is going to be the one that helps remind her who she is. However, Mordecai is also a Jew. And there's one thing we know about Jews, especially in this time when they're scattered over the empire, and it's that people sometimes, as important people from the kingdom walked by them or the king, everyone would bow before them. Except as a Jew, Mordecai would not. None of the Jews will. In fact, we know another famous story in the Bible of three people who infamously do not bow, and they get thrown into a fire in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Or if you've watched VeggieTales, that's Rakshak and Benny, for those who remember that one. Bit of a throwback there. But we know that because they refuse to bow, they get thrown into the fire. They get punished for that. The Jews wouldn't bow because they followed God. They would only bow to God. And at this moment, in this part of the story, we meet another character in our story. And this is a guy named Haman. Now, King Xerxes is the king. He's the number one guy in the entire empire. Haman is his number two, which means anything Haman says also happens. Anything Haman wants, he also gets. Everywhere Haman goes, they announce his presence. And everywhere Haman goes, people bow before him and make way. And Haman loves that. He thinks that's awesome. Everybody likes Haman because they have to like Haman. Otherwise, he can do whatever he wants, right? He's the number two guy in the entire kingdom. And everywhere he goes, people bow. Except when he passed by Mordecai, Mordecai didn't. Because he would never have bowed. Because none of the Jews bow. They only bow to God. Except Haman sees this and is furious that Mordecai wouldn't bow to him. See, Haman likes the fact that everyone bows to him. He likes the fact that everyone gets out of his way and pays him respect and gives Haman whatever he wants. And he can't believe that this Mordecai wouldn't bow to him. Now, in the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those three get thrown into a fire themselves. But Haman has a different idea. He says, because Mordecai has not bowed to me, I'm going to punish all of the Jews in the Persian Empire, every single one of them. And because he's the number two guy to the king, he gets the opportunity to do this. So he goes to the king, he convinces him to make an unbreakable law, a law that no one can change or break, that on a certain day of the year, anyone can attack and harm and steal and kill from the Jews with no penalty at all. With one stroke of his pen, Haman has signed the destruction of the Jews into law, every single one of them. The people of God, gone. When Mordecai hears about this, he's overwhelmed with emotion. And he knows something must be done. And luckily, Mordecai knows someone who can get an audience with the king. So he goes to Esther. And he says, Esther, you have to go to the king and plead with him on behalf of the Jews, of the people of God. You're in a position to do something. And that makes a lot of sense until we understand that in King Xerxes' Persian Empire, if you appeared before the king unannounced, uninvited, and he didn't say, come in, it would cost you your life. No one walked before the king uninvited. It was not a thing. And the king hadn't invited Esther in over a month. So to Esther, it felt like he didn't really want her around very much anymore. And yet Mordecai is asking her to risk her life and then risk it again when she reveals that she's a Jew just to attempt to save her people, to change an unbreakable law. It's here we see the tension in the story. We see Esther's difficult choice. Her life has been a whirlwind up to this point. She goes from just being a Jew to being queen, and now Mordecai is asking her to risk everything on the chance that she could save her people, the people of God. We see that Esther's not eager to go do this, and she's wrestling with who she is. Is it more important to her that she's queen? Or is it more important to her that she's one of the people of God? And we contrast this tension in Esther with the steadiness of Mordecai as he's pleading with her. You're in a position to ask. You could do something. And it's here in Esther chapter 4 that we read one of the most impactful lines of the entire story and something that I'm going to call a Mordecai moment. Esther 4, as Esther and Mordecai are arguing about this, and Mordecai says, you have to go to the king, and Esther says, I can't, I could die. Mordecai turns and says this. He says, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows, but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. I want to read that last part again. Who knows, but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. I want to say this another way. Maybe you are here for such a time as this. Mordecai here is challenging Esther. And he's recognized something vital. Mordecai is recognizing that perhaps God has been at work behind the scenes this entire time. Perhaps it is no accident that Esther is queen. Perhaps God has worked in her life to place her as queen so that she can do exactly this. No other Jew in the Persian Empire even has a chance to talk to the king except Esther. She has the potential. Maybe she has been given this position of queen for this purpose. Maybe she is here for such a time as this. Esther is given the chance to believe that her life is not an accident, that she is queen for a purpose, and that she has the ability to, and God is wanting her to act. Mordecai is asking Esther to realize that God has been moving in her life this entire time, and that he has a purpose for her. But here's the thing about these stories, about these people we learn about and their interactions with God and with each other, is that those words don't just speak to them, they reach out to us now. And this story is no different. As much as the words of Mordecai are talking to Esther in her specific place and this time when she was queen, the words of Mordecai also echo out to us as well. And it feels, as we read this story, that Mordecai is asking us the same thing. Let me try the words of Mordecai again, this time with us in mind. Maybe you are here for such a time as this. Have you ever considered that? That maybe it's not an accident that you are where you are? The words of Mordecai to Esther reach out to us even today and remind us of a truth about God that many of us don't realize or have forgotten. The truth that God is moving in ways none of us realize, but he is always moving. God is not silent. God is not stagnant. He is moving and placing us in ways that are intentional. The point of the whole story of Esther actually is right here before us. It's a truth about a God that moves in mysterious ways, behind the scenes, in our lives, placing people in our lives and placing us in others' lives. A God that asks us to always be prepared for what he is doing in us and through us. This truth forces us to examine our own lives in the same way Mordecai is asking Esther to. Maybe we are here for such a time as this. Maybe where you live, work, and exist isn't an accident, but instead by design. Maybe it's intentional. See, the thing is, all of you in this room or online are in places nobody else can be. You have neighbors, coworkers, clients. Your kids have friends and their parents, people you talk to, people you walk by on the street, people you go to see at the grocery store, people in your circles, people that you have a sphere of influence with that nobody else does. Church, I want you to take your life and the way you understand it and flip it on its head. Maybe it's not an accident that you live in the house you live in. Maybe it's not an accident that you go to the same store every week. Maybe it's not an accident that you work with that person or you hired that person or that person is the boss over you. Maybe you have been placed. Maybe you are exactly where you are on purpose. One of the best lines I've ever heard from a pastor that I think applies really well here is maybe you are where you are on purpose for a purpose. Mordecai reminds all of us that God is moving, working, and shaping us into who he needs to be to save a broken world that desperately needs him. We carry the hope of the world with us everywhere we go. The gospel truth of a God that loves them and saved them, that God is asking us to share. Today, as you came in, you were asked in the lobby to put a pin where you live. Either close up in Lamont, if you lived close in Lamont, or a bit farther if you lived not exactly in Lamont, so we didn't fill up the center too badly here. And I wanted to bring this upstage. We started this at the prayer gathering Monday night, and I wanted to continue it today because when I saw this, I noticed something. I want you to notice every single pin on this map. Most of them placed by you guys or the first service. That pin represents where one of you lives. And I want you to take for a moment to imagine the sphere of influence around each of these pins. The neighbors, the kids that play on the street, the people they work with, or the places they walk by, or the people they know. Each one of these pins represents a circle. You could almost draw a circle around each of them, people that only this pin can influence. And we're all placed that way. But my favorite part about this map is the red star, is a red heart that represents where our church is. And you can almost get this sense that our church has this sphere of influence, this potential for impact that he has placed us here to have. Each one of these pins and each one of these neighbors and each one of these places is a Mordecai moment waiting to happen. Maybe you are there for such a time as this. But I also don't think that it's just an individual. I don't think it's just about you. I think it's about all of us as the church. In fact, maybe we are here for such a time as this. Our church, our people in this area, in this time, for this purpose. See, when I look at this map, I see all the pins that aren't here. I see all the families in our rec programs, all the families in our preschool, all the people in the activity groups we do, and in the life groups, and the neighbors, and the people you talk to, all the people that need to hear the hope of Jesus that only you have the opportunity to share with them. I see the potential for God to move in ways none of us expected or realized. And it's in the very DNA of our church. As our mission statement says, we exist to develop followers of Jesus that love God and serve others. It is in the very mission statement of our church to do this, to recognize where we are as a placed people on a mission to tell the world about who he is. And when I also look at this map, I see all the people that will soon live here. Most of us know that there's hundreds of homes coming to Lamont in the next couple of years. And that's tons of families and people who need to hear the hope of Jesus, that we are in proximity and have the ability and potential to influence and to tell them about. We carry this hope of the world. Maybe we have a chance here to do a great work for God. Maybe we have people in our lives who will come to know him and change their lives forever. In fact, I would go so far as to say this confidently. I would say that we are here for such a time as this. It is no maybe. And I know I can't be the only one that believes that because I know your stories. So many of you have come here and experienced a new life in Jesus in the community of God. And so many of your stories began with someone realizing that maybe you were the person they were supposed to invite. Many of you ended up here because someone had a Mordecai moment and decided that God had placed you in their life for them to tell the gospel truth to you so that your life could be changed. All of us are here because someone thought maybe God had placed them. They realized they were in just the right place at just the right time, and your life has changed because of it. So today I want to ask you, what's yours? Where is your opportunity? Where is your Mordecai moment? Who are the people in your life that you have been placed to impact? Who is the person in your life that only you can reach? And what might God be asking you to do? How can you take a step back from your life and realize that maybe it wasn't an accident? How can you recognize the ways God has positioned you to make an impact that you may not even be aware of yet? He has a dream there, a plan there, a design there that we may not even realize is happening, just as it was for Esther. From her perspective, she was just a girl and she just became queen. But from God's perspective, she was placed to do a work only Esther could do, and it left her with a choice. She could decide that she enjoyed being queen too much to speak up and risk her life. She enjoyed the rights and privileges and responsibilities that a queen was given. Or she could remember who she was. Now, this entire series, we've asked ourselves one thing. Who are we going to be? Are we going to let the world define us? Or are we going to let God? For Esther, this is very clear. Is she going to let her identity as a person of God define her and speak up for those she needs to speak up for? Or is she going to let the world around her define her as queen and stay as such? For us, There's many things that challenge for our identities. Maybe you're a husband, a father, a mother, a daughter. Maybe you have kids. Maybe you are a kid. Maybe you're a teen. Maybe you're a grandparent. You have friends, neighbors. There's so many titles I could speak on you that could define you. And I'm here to ask you, what's going to be the most important one? Who are you going to be? Esther, in this tension, chooses to be a person of God. She chooses to believe that God had placed her in her role as queen for such a time as this. She risks her life to go to the king. The king grants her an audience, and because of her actions, all of the people of God are saved. An impact she could have never dreamed of having. All she had to do was recognize what God had been doing in her life already. She comes to believe that she was placed in her position as a queen, and people were saved because of it. And today, just as Esther was, we are faced with the words of Mordecai as we get asked to remember who we are. We are asked to remember that God is asking us to move, that he has been moving in our life and asking us to act in ways only we can act. There are people only you can influence, people only you have an impact on. People that God has placed in your life at this time for a purpose. It is no accident. Maybe it's by design. I want to go back to this map for a second, because there's something else I see. When I look at this map, I see seeds. Now, this whole year, we've been engaged with this planting work, as Pastor Galen has really helped lead us into, and this idea that God has been planting and we are going to plant along with God. And when I look at this map, I see seeds scattered over this area that our church has been placed in and planted for a purpose. I see a design. Each one of these pins represents one of you that God has placed exactly where he needs you to be. I see God planting people and opportunities, and I see a people that have been planted and are called to plant alongside God. I see God doing a work behind the scenes that started far before any of us were here, that he's asking us to participate in. I see a planted people. I see the potential for an impact far greater than any of us could ever imagine as we engage in this planting work. I look at this map, and I see our church placed in intentional ways to do the things only we can do. Reaching the people that God has placed in our sphere of influence, the places that he has planted us to be in. So as you leave today, I want you to think about your life. The job you hold, the positions, the titles, the identities you are, the friends, the neighbors, the places you're in. And I want to leave you with this question. Where has God planted you? Because just maybe, you've been planted, and God has a work for you to do. And just maybe all you need to do is say yes and open your eyes to the work God has for you and to the impact that he's asking you to have. You just need to say yes to open your eyes to the people he's placed in your life for you to influence. Because just maybe you are here for such a time as this. Let's pray. God, thank you for being a God that always moves. Thank you for planting us in places that you need us in ways we can impact only that we can do. I pray that you would work through us and in us this week, God, in these months and these years, that we would come to recognize the people you've placed in our lives that we can have an impact on. I pray that we would have our hearts broken as yours is for the people of this world, that we could share the truth of who you are and act in the ways only you have planted us to do. We thank you for being a God that is faithful, that is good, and that moves in our lives. In your name, amen.
Hey, thanks again for joining us for the First NAS podcast. If you're interested in what your next step in growing your relationship with God might look like, I'd encourage you to visit us at firstnaz.cc/engage, or you can download our app from the App Store, First Nazarene Church. And there you can let us know if you've made a decision for Jesus, or you can also find practical resources to help you grow closer to Jesus. I'd also invite you to subscribe to the podcast if you're not already, to make sure that you've always got the latest content. And if you want to, feel free to share this on your social accounts. You never know who else might need to hear today's message as well. Well, thanks again for joining us. Have a great day.